Welcome to the Start Me Up podcast, part of the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. I'm Kimberly, fully vaccinated, almost boosted Johnson in D.C. Today, I'm excited. Going to be talking to Marcus Flowers. He's running against Marjorie three names, Marjorie Taylor Greene in Georgia. He's an Army veteran. He's a Georgia Democrat. I really want him to win. So I can't wait to talk to him. Please enjoy my conversation with Marcus Flowers. Welcome to the show, Marcus.
Thank you for having me, Kimberly. We appreciate the opportunity to speak with you and your followers.
Yeah. And I mean, first of all, I have to say congratulations on your Vote Vets endorsement. I know them well. I love them. So congratulations. That's totally awesome.
Thank you. That means a lot to me.
Yeah, I know. I can imagine. Okay. So obviously you're in Georgia and you are an Army veteran. You are running against Marjorie Taylor Greene. So I'd like for you, before we start getting into the weeds, just tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, a little bit about me. I am originally from Troy, Alabama, mm-hmm. the birthplace of John Lewis.
Wow.
Yeah, I grew up there until I was 11 years old and ended up moving into a children's home because my family couldn't support me. Mm. And I lived there until I was 18.
Wow.
At 18, I joined the Army. Swore an oath to support and defend the Constitution. And that's pretty much what I've been doing for the last 27, 28 years. As a soldier, I'm a former defense contractor and a government official with the Department of Defense. And service to this country has been my life. And seeing what's been going on in the world over the last several years, mm-hmm. I'd say, watching Marjorie Taylor Greene's ascension,
mm-hmm.
I felt like it was time for me to, step up. And one of the last messages John Lewis left us was, or the last message John Lewis left us with was, when you hear that highest calling in your heart, stand up for what you truly believe. And those words, resonated with me. And watching Marjorie Taylor Greene misrepresent our district and me, had to answer that call. I had to answer that call.
So what are the specifics as to why you decided to run against her?
Well, as I told you, I was a government official, soldier, defense contractor, and I was always bound by Hatch Act, so I couldn't be outwardly political.
Mm-hmm.
But watching the, and I'm going to call it the social reckoning, mm-hmm. that was taking place over the majority, if not all, of the previous administration, watching that taking place, and I could see, the white hot rhetoric coming from both sides, mostly from one side of the political spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching all of that, and then I said, we've got to tone it down a little bit. This is very divisive.
Yeah,
there's hate speech that's becoming more and more prevalent. And then I watched as George Floyd was murdered.
Yeah.
A lot of people have feelings about that, but that was one of the things that, it was jarring for me. And I was like, okay, we've seen police officers, videos of police officers shooting black men. We've seen, people getting pulled over for routine stops and being killed, but watching Officer Chauvin resting his knee on George Floyd's neck so nonchalantly while this man begs for his life, calls for his mother, that kind of got me. And I'm not a person who's easily shaken. I spent a decade in war zones, mm-hmm. in Iraq and Afghanistan, and I've seen death up close and personal.
Yeah.
I've lost my life a few times. So I've seen the horrors of war, but watching that, that's murder.
Right,
it was murder.
It was.
Watching that shook me. So I got on social media after that for the first time. I got a Twitter account and started talking with people in my neighborhood and around the country and, seeing what other people's feelings were.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've never spoken out about anything before. I just started talking to people and I started to see people, they're feeling the way that I'm feeling. They're seeing what I'm seeing. And I bring a unique perspective to it because, like I said, I've spent a decade in war zones and I see the dangers of misinformation and disinformation and radicalism. I've seen that. I've witnessed it firsthand. Mm-hmm. In comes Marjorie Taylor Greene into the picture. I started seeing her, how she swoops into our district and basically buys a primary. And then the guy who was running against her, the Democrat, drops out of the race. Mm-hmm. While trying to help get elected, you know, as far as putting up yard signs and, you know, making phone calls. That's about all I could do as a government official at the time. But he drops out, and became apparent that she was going to be our next representative. And, you know, so I reached out to her and said, hey, you need to walk back some of these statements that you're making. This is divisive rhetoric. You know, you're disparaging black and brown people. Mm-hmm. This isn't who we are in this district. Walk that back. Mm-hmm. If you're going to represent us, you need to represent us. Crickets from her.
Yeah.
But then on January 6th, I'm sitting at home, you know, because it's during COVID, working, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm watching what's going on at the Capitol. I'm watching police officers being beaten with American flags while a Confederate battle flag is being paraded through our Capitol rotunda. Mm-hmm. And for me, that was the point where it became mission critical.
Wow.
I had to do something. I had John Lewis's words getting louder and louder in the back of my mind. So the very next day, I called my supervisor. I resigned my post as a government official and said, I'm going to run for Congress against
Wow. Oh, my God. So now it appears that she was involved in the planning of the insurrection. I'm just curious, do you believe if she's found guilty that she should serve time?
I believe in accountability. Mm-hmm. You know, my background is in compliance, and one of my jobs in the government and as a defense contractor and soldier was combating fraud, waste, and abuse. Mm-hmm. So I fully believe in accountability in those who break the law. Mm-hmm. And let's be honest here, that was an insurrection.
Yeah.
We can't show it. She played a part in it.
Yeah.
We saw her words and her statements. And you can watch our videos that we have out online on our Twitter account or on our Facebook account that shows that she was part of that, I don't know what you call them, those seditionists who were helping incite the violence of January 6th. So, yeah, I believe they all should be held accountable.
And just in case people don't know where to find you, we'll do this at the end too, but what is your Twitter handle?
My Twitter handle is Marcus for Georgia. That's Marcus, M-A-R-C-U-S, the letter, or number 4, and Georgia all spelled out, at Marcus for Georgia.
Yeah, because you've got those videos up, and it's good. I'm sure a lot of people who are listening have seen them, but just in case, it's good to check out your feed to find out a little bit more about you and a little bit more about Marjorie. So you're running in Georgia, which, you know, I mean, it's a deep red state, and I guess where you're running specifically, it's deep red. But obviously, we saw Georgia turn blue in 2020. Now, what do you think is going to happen? Like, how do you see yourself winning there? Because there's a lot of red voters. How are you dealing with them? What are you saying to them?
I'm just being me. Kimberly, that's all I can be. Mm-hmm. I get out and I talk with people and I meet them where they are. Mm-hmm. I listen to them. I listen to their concerns. I tell them what I would do for them. And that's constituent service. At the end of the day, that's what it's all about. I'll represent you mm-hmm. and the things that you need. Like, we need health care in this district. Rural broadband is something that we desperately need. Yeah. And attracting businesses. I mean, we need rural broadband to attract and keep companies here because, let's face it, no one's going to come to a district where they don't have reliable internet.
Right.
Infrastructure is huge here. And one of the things I tell people is, look, you know, and she's not popular here. Let me state that.
Right.
I talk to Republicans and Democrats alike, and they're embarrassed by her.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Well, so what are you hearing?
You may not be happy with everything I say or do or the way I vote, but I will work on the issues here. I will help bring you closer to your government by focusing on issues. But one thing I will never do is embarrass you.
So what are you hearing specifically from Republican voters? Are you getting positive feedback from them? Are they curious about you?
Yes, they are. They want to know what I stand for. And I get the same questions you're asking me now are the questions I get from the Republican voters. Where are you from?
Right.
how long have you lived here?
Yeah.
What issues do you want to focus on? What do you think? And I just talk about the issues here.
Mm-hmm.
It's local. All politics are local. I talk about kitchen table issues, and I talk about common sense reforms mm-hmm. that we all can agree on. And I talk about the misinformation and disinformation that's out there that we need to get beyond, and that we need to get beyond this division.
Yeah.
Because the majority of us, the vast majority of us, and I'm telling you, people to a person, every Republican I talk to a person, agrees and understands that the majority of us agree on most things in the center.
Mm-hmm.
We have a far right and a far left mm-hmm. who are the loudest voices in the room. We've got to get beyond that. And people want that. They want decency. They want us to be able to talk and figure things out. That's what I'm seeing here.
Hmm.
And I've traveled the entire district in this short. I know it's early still, and I still mm-hmm. have a year to go.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I'm hearing consistently. And yes, there are those who think that, oh yeah, she's doing a great job. And I just question, well, what is it that she's doing a great job?
About? Right, yeah.
You know, what do you think that she's doing for you? How is she fighting for you? Some people get caught up into that, but they're in that misinformation and disinformation
mm-hmm.
bubble.
Mm-hmm.
It's dangerous. So then we have that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I explain to them why I see that the way I do it and give it to them from my perspective. You know, someone who's sat down across the table from Afghan and Iraqi warlords and negotiated on behalf of the United States, someone who's been to Camp Buka, the birthplace of ISIS, and looked at our enemies in the eyes. And I can tell you, I said, guys, when I look at my next door neighbor who's a Republican, we get along fine. That's not my enemy.
Mm-hmm.
None of the people here in this district are my enemy because they have different political views than I do.
Mm-hmm.
There's enough goodwill for us to meet in the middle somewhere and talk, but we have to get back to decency, integrity, honor, and negotiating in good faith, which is what's been lacking in our politics
yeah.
quite some time now.
What would you say are the most pressing issues for you in this next election, whether it's your candidacy or in a general sense nationwide?
We've got to do something about the misinformation and disinformation out there.
Yeah.
That's something we have to push back on. But the issues that I talked about before, jobs in the economy, infrastructure mm-hmm. in these rural areas, rural broadband, healthcare. I mean, we've got an aging population here in this district. And something personal to me are veterans issues. We talked about this at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a disabled veteran, you know, someone who suffered a traumatic brain injury, and it took forever to get, you know, my disability benefits from, mm-hmm. you know, my service. But I want to take care of our veterans
mm-hmm.
because that's personal for me.
Yeah.
I see guys who served in Vietnam just now getting their benefits.
Wow.
In Vietnam. That is criminal to me. That
it
should
is.
Have never happened.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not a one-off.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked to several people who are in the same boat. We've got to take better care of our veterans. We've got to take care of our aging population. We've got to work on bringing small businesses back and getting businesses in the district.
Yeah.
It's all local for me.
Mm-hmm.
So the issues that I want to work on.
When you say things like this to Republican voters, how are they taking it? Do you get a sense that they like what you're saying? Do you feel that they're skeptical of you?
It resonates. It okay. resonates. You know, some you'll get the wheels turning and they'll be mm-hmm. like, this guy's a Democrat. Democrats are our enemy.
Right.
Once more and more you talk, you break past that those right-wing talking points because they look at me and you know it's kind of hard to paint me as a socialist or a communist.
Yeah.
When I tell them what I've done, my entire career has been about service to the country.
Yeah.
And you know, it's, yeah, you see them start to think, like, wait a minute. Well, he's not at all what I thought Democrat was. So,
wow. Yeah. Interesting.
That's the reception I get here.
Yeah. Okay, now I have a question for you. As a black man, how do you process the racism and the white supremacy that we're currently experiencing? And I just want to know, do you feel that it's gotten worse? Because from what I can witness, at least online and some people that I talk to in person, I see other black folks saying that it's always been this way, but it's been hidden. And I would, you know, I'm not certainly going to argue with that. The way that it looks to me, it looks like it's just more blatant and obvious now. So I'd like to hear your perspective.
my perspective on racism. Now, as a black man who grew up in the South, have I ever experienced racism? I mean, yeah, of course. I have. And, you know, now a large portion of my adulthood I spent out of the country serving overseas. So when I came back, I moved back to the country in 2014, I noticed things were, I'll say, different. Mm-hmm. Things were a little bit more overt. Mm-hmm. You know, it was being discussed more than I remember it being discussed. You know, things were being captured on camera a lot more.
Right.
So, I mean, those are the things. I think it's gotten out in the public more, and more people are just seeing that, yes, this is a problem. People have been talking about this for years and years. As someone who considers himself a little bit of a history buff, you know, it's always been there.
You know, yeah.
We've had these issues. And I think a lot of people want to think that, oh, no, we don't have racial issues. We had a black president, for
instance. Right.
That, I think, brought out a certain segment of our population who are, let's just face it, white supremacists.
Yeah.
Pushing back. I mean, you had them coming out saying, oh, when Obama got elected, you know, that helped with recruiting of, you know, Klan members. Those guys haven't gone away. They're rebranding now. Mm-hmm. They're no longer wearing hoods. They're wearing khaki pants and, you know, walking through town. And they're spreading disinformation and misinformation online. So you, to answer your question more bluntly, we've always had a problem with racism. Mm-hmm. Has it gotten worse or better? I think it's more visible now. Is the simple answer.
Yeah. I mean, I can say, you know, I mean, as a woman, I'm a white woman, but the white supremacy that I see and that I see, you know, political people talking about openly, I mean, it threatens me because white supremacy is misogyny as well. And, you know, I mean, it's like I said before, obviously there, it's always been here. We've always had racism. And I totally agree. Like when Barack Obama was elected, it basically just ripped off that underbelly that maybe felt uncomfortable in public saying something. All of a sudden now they freaked out and then they started being very vocal, like you said, overt. They didn't hide it. And then Trump comes in and, you know, the good people on both sides and all the things that he said, it seems to me now that they're, you know, emboldened. It's not to say that it's necessarily worse. It's just that they're emboldened and we definitely see a lot more of it. And it's scary. It's
not so fringe anymore.
Right.
It's not so fringe anymore. You see those white supremacist talking points, things like memes for people who don't understand.
Yeah.
Or have seen those, let's call them dog whistles in these memes. That stuff, my community, we know what that means.
Yeah.
We know what these means are. And they make them so nice and palatable so that kids see them and it's, you know, it's just normal. Yeah, maybe I feel that way. But it's disinformation. It's psychological warfare from the far right fringes. And these people are in the minority.
Mm-hmm.
We have to remember
that
they are the minority. Most people, and I believe this with all of my heart, most people are good.
Yeah.
But they're being misguided. And these far-right talking points that are leaking into our political discourse, you know, this is the misinformation and disinformation campaign that I'm talking about that we're pushing back so hard against. And you're here listening to Fox News and people like Tucker Carlson talking, and you're recognizing that, wait a minute, this is white supremacy at its worst.
Yeah.
But rebranded in a way that it's more palatable for everyone. And, oh, these guys are trying to take something from me. No one's trying to take anything from anyone.
Right.
Wanting equal rights doesn't mean that infringes on someone else's rights. So we've got to push back on that stuff. And that's a part of our larger campaign. Yeah. Win, lose, or draw, I'm going to be in this. Mark Flowers is not going away. And I'm going to continue to push back on that with everything I have.
So do you feel that the next two election cycles are going to make or break our democracy?
You know, as someone who's served the country my entire adult life, America's been my life.
Mm-hmm.
Make or break. I think, you know, we've got a reckoning that's coming up in these next two elections. Mm-hmm. They're important. They're extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
We we've got to push back against, as we were talking about in the last segment, against that misinformation and disinformation and these voter suppression laws that, you know, one side's trying to do. Because I see it as, you know, if your platform's not about something that's helping people, then it's just a conspiracy for power. Mm-hmm. And that's really what it is.
Yeah.
On, right, you know, that's, we're going to be the party of no, and we're going to say that you guys are not governing because we're not going to help. And then we're going to run ads and say that you can't govern,
right,
when actually Democrats have been delivering for quite some time, mm-hmm, on a lot of things. And I think that we need to continue to show that we can deliver, so that we win in the next election. We need to keep the House and don't need to see a certain individual come back as our president.
No kidding.
In spite of voter suppression laws popping up all over the country, we can push back against those and still win. But we have to show that we can run government in an effective and efficient way. We have to be able to show that.
Well,
because the Republicans are killing us on messaging right now.
Yeah, well, you know, I want to say, I think I agree that the Republicans are really good at messaging. And I think right now the Democrats are, I do think that they have learned, especially since Obama was president and watching what the right did that whole time, the way that they handled his presidency, the way they handled him. But what I'm also seeing right now is the media is, I think, doing the country a disservice, because it's like this 24/7 cycle where they have to have a headline. There's arguments that are made all over the place. Certain people running, whether it's, you know, CNN, MSNBC, of course we know about Fox, but other networks, or if you want to go to Politico or New York Times editorial sections, we have people like, there was a guy, Connor something or other, and I don't know his last name, but he wrote for The Atlantic last night, it came out last night, that he said that Ron DeSantis is basically okay. Ron DeSantis didn't scare this writer, in the same way Trump did, which I look at Ron DeSantis and I just think he's a smarter version of Trump. How do you feel? Like, I mean, I think Democrats can always improve on their messaging, and it's one thing that I say a lot, but I feel like they've done a pretty good job. If you want to find out what's in the Build Back Better bill, you can look online. There's an NBC article that tells you everything you need to know about it. But then you go to the media, a lot of the media, and they're just focusing on how much the bill cost as opposed to what's in it. And they kind of make, you know, I mean, like the idea of, they started off at 3-something trillion and now they've settled on 1-something trillion, 175, I think, or 125, I can't remember. But if we hadn't known, if Democratic voters or even Republican voters didn't know any cost, and we didn't know that there was not a compromise, because I see it, you know, with two people standing in the way, a little bit more of a compromise, but still, compromise down, the things that we did get are very impressive. Yet it's sold to us through the media as if it was a big fat failure. And then you have all these apathetic Democrats saying that the Democrats are weak. What do you have to say about that, especially with the media?
But that's the thing. Democrats should be focusing on more and getting that messaging out more than what we've delivered on.
Mm-hmm.
Because just, for example, drain the swamp. Everybody knows that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But they don't know that Democrats have delivered for many, many years on the American Rescue Plan, the Affordable Care Act, mm-hmm, you know, things like that, child tax credits. Mm-hmm. That's not breaking through as much as, you know, being called the radical left or things like that.
Right.
These are the things that I mean. That's what I mean when I talk about we have to work on our messaging.
Yeah.
Because, and show what we've done as Democrats, what we've delivered on, and get people past the whole drain the swamp thing. And it's the whole lock her up thing, how that caught fire. That's what I mean by the Republican messaging is far better than ours, because these little catchphrases that stick, but they're not true.
Right.
So, you know, we're the party who got the Violence Against Women's pass or the reauthorization. You know, we've gotten bipartisan background checks passed. These are things that people need to know. Okay, well, that's the pushback. You know, so we need to push back against, we need to tie the radical right. That needs to be one of the messages that sticks, because, you know, we There's a few radicals out there on the right. So,
and you're running against one of them.
I'm running against the most radical.
Yes.
One on the right, so. He's also a believer in QAnon. So yes. These are the things. That's what I mean when I talk about messaging. Democrats are delivering.
Right.
I want to see the messaging where people know for a fact and they can push back against those things and say, yeah, here's what they've delivered on.
Right.
So that's all I mean by messaging. We need more effective messaging.
Yeah, and I will not argue that. I think you're absolutely right.
I guess Fox News is probably one of those right-wing message boards and Newsmax and OAN right. Who are willing to, they can't find a new low to get to in order to push those messages out.
Ugh, it's just so frustrating.
It is.
I'm going to move over to the insurrection. And as far as Bannon and Trump, there's a lot of opinions about Merrick Garland, what he is doing, what he isn't doing. I'm seeing some lawyers argue that Bannon should be arrested now, and I'm seeing others saying that the legal process needs to play out. And I'm just, how do you feel about this 1-6 committee and what's happening with Bannon right now?
Well, let me first start by saying I'm not a lawyer. So. The legal part of it, I don't know a whole lot about, but again, it all comes back to accountability.
Mm-hmm.
Congress has oversight authority, full stop. You shouldn't just be able to ignore a subpoena and try and run out the clock, to avoid, answering.
Yeah.
So I guess I'll fall on the side of, maybe he should be arrested and sit in jail for a while until he decides it's, maybe it's in my best interest to, come clean and talk to the January 6th committee. So it's kind of where I fall on that, but I'm all about accountability. So that's me.
So with accountability, let's go out for, as far as justice playing out for people who plotted and planned for the insurrection. I mean, again, I'm going to say lawyers have said it's difficult to prove the intent, right? Where this is really sticky. So Donald Trump clearly stood in front of the in front of that microphone on January 6th, and he said what he said, and we all know what he said. But you take it into a court of law, and all of a sudden there's things that it's different than the court of public opinion. Some people say that if Trump is going to go to jail, which I will ask you about that in a minute, but if he's going to go to jail, it would be more likely because of his taxes, because, math, and it's on paper and it's easy to see if he broke the law, if he did, but I'm sure he did. But with the 1-6 insurrection, it's going to be more difficult, I think, to prove. Lawyers would have to have some kind of solid, absolute, I don't even know that they would take it. Pardon me?
They would need a smoking gun.
Yes, they would need a smoking gun. So regardless of, and I know this might make you uncomfortable, but I'm going to ask you anyway, regardless of whether it's for tax reasons or for insurrection reasons, do you think either Trump should go to jail or do you think he ever will go to jail?
Well, we are a nation of laws. It's all about law and order. Mm-hmm. No one is above the law, not even a president. So if you break the law, if I break the law, I fully expect that there are consequences to my actions.
Mm-hmm.
Most people do, which is why we don't break the laws. We don't want any of those consequences. Again, no one is above the law. And that's why the work of the January 6th committee is so important, to get to the bottom of everything that happened,
mm-hmm.
not only on that day, but leading up to that day. That's why phone records are important.
Yes.
Note everything that these guys are pushing back on and trying to hide from the public. We need to see that. It's our information. It belongs to us. Congress has oversight authority. Full stop. They need to exercise it. And I think the DOJ should get on board with that.
Yeah.
My opinion. I wouldn't presume to tell, the Attorney General what to do, but we're a nation of law and order.
Right. So. Well, then in the case, if let's say Trump escapes any kind of accountability. And you know, I mean, according to listening to angry people on Twitter,
sounds like you've been doing it for years.
Exactly. But you know, there's people on Twitter, and it's not just on Twitter, but I mean, that's political Twitter. You've got people assuming the worst, which I don't like to do, but assuming he's not going to be held accountable. So let's just say because I just did a tweet and I said, you know, it's not that it doesn't matter what the Democrats do, but no matter what they do, no matter what the DOJ does, it is up to American voters to decide whether democracy stays or goes. And, you know, that means to me, that means if the DOJ fails to, you know, put Trump in jail or put some of the higher ups in jail, accountability, rule of law, you know, as voters, I don't want to punish the Democratic Party by ushering in fascism, because that's not going to be the answer that I want. So, I mean, do you think we would be able to move forward as a nation? I think there's a real possibility. I mean, I don't like to think this way, but, you know, we've seen what we've seen in this country. Wealthy white men, just wealthy men in general, criminal men often walk free, don't have to, they're not held accountable. Can we move on as a country in a progressive way without that accountability?
The short answer, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think so. This is not like some white collar criminal getting off for, mm-hmm. you know, some run of the mill fraud. This got at the very heart of our democracy.
Yeah.
Tried to overturn an election. We've all seen, yes, there is the court of public opinion. We've seen a lot of things out there. I am the same way as you. I like to wait for the other shoe to drop to see all of the evidence and then let the chips fall where they may. No one should be above the law. No one.
No one. I totally agree.
or sitting president.
Yeah.
For that matter.
Yeah, absolutely.
No one should be above the law. If it's found that Trump, Green, Rudy Giuliani, any of them broke the law, then they should face those consequences.
Yeah.
I think that will help us move on as a nation. And I think there's still things that are coming out that shows us, that will show us just how close we got to losing it all.
Right.
That's why I'm in this thing, because I see how close we got to losing it all. They need to wait for the January 6th committee to say, look, something has to be done now. And I keep saying it, accountability. People need to be held accountable for this. Not just the people who were there at the Capitol that day, who entered the building, but those who incited them, those who helped plan it. And if anyone was there who helped fund it, that all needs to be brought into the light. And people need to be held accountable.
Well, yeah. You know, and I'm just going to say, as a voter, I want to see from Democratic candidates straight talk. Everything you're doing right now, just being straight, calling it like it is, understanding the parameters in which you have to work. And so obviously I encourage that for any candidate, but I want to ask what advice do you have to voters specifically about 2022? Because obviously there's all this division, there's confusion, there's mis and disinformation floating around out there. People are very anxious and worried and scared. Of course, I'm one of them. So what advice would you have to Democratic voters, or to any voter actually?
Well, to all voters actually. You know, yes, you hear politicians say it every time. This is the most important election. You got to get out and vote. But let me be clear here. This one is very important. This is about the preservation of our democracy for our kids, our grandkids, future generations. This is important, because if we allow this one to get away and we allow certain people to get back in office with no restraints, then I think the wheels come off.
Yeah.
Your vote is your voice, and your voice is important. If it wasn't important, they wouldn't be trying to take it away from you. As we see with laws started here in Georgia, Georgia was a proving ground, SB 202, and you're seeing those laws pop up all over the country. Mm-hmm. We've got to push back, and I think we will push back. So we have to keep getting that message out. Talk to everyone that you know. Mm-hmm. Get out and vote, because our very country depends on it.
I'll add that in this election for 2022, and I mean, I, of course, I'll say this for 2024 as well, maybe take an extra step. But, you know, if the last time what you did was vote and maybe donate to some candidates, this time do some phone banking. This time go out, register voters. You know, as you said, this is like we say this every election, and it's true, but this is the most important election of our lifetime because of what you just said, because of the voter restrictions that we're seeing all over. And I, you know, which actually leads me to my next question, which is, as far as the voting rights bills, I mean, we know we've got some problems in the Democratic Party with two Democratic senators, Manchin and Sinema, and we've heard that they're not so keen on reforming the filibuster, but perhaps there might be a carve out for this particular bill. Do you have confidence that we're going to be able to pass some, at least maybe not the whole thing, but, you know, enough to get rid of gerrymandering? Do you think we'll be able to accomplish that in 2022?
I'm hopeful. I am hopeful. We've got to get through 2022.
Yeah, we have to.
People have to get out and vote. I mean, and I see that enthusiasm is down, and I know you're seeing that, and mm-hmm. it's being discussed in the media. We're going to see what happens tomorrow in Virginia.
Yes, yeah.
But people have to get out and vote. I don't know how else to express it. This is going to be the first election after an insurrection.
Yes.
I can tell you how important it is. And I'm not even talking about 2024, because that's going to be even more important. Mm-hmm. But this is the most important one mm-hmm. right now. Mm-hmm. Got to do it. Got to get some of these, man, these far right people like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Cawthorn. And
yeah.
These guys, they've got to go. They belong nowhere near governance.
No.
Nowhere near governance. If we want to save democracy, this is how we do it. We vote those guys out. They've got to go.
Well, I certainly hope that you're able to win. I'd love to see her gone. She's awful. And I'm grateful, very grateful that you're running. And I, you know, I definitely, I wish you all the best, and I will help to promote you and amplify. Feel free to send me any tweets that you'd like for me to amplify, because I think you're fantastic and I really appreciate what you're doing. And, you know, it's I had Bruno Amato on not too long ago. He was also endorsed by Vote Vets, and he's, as you know, running against Kevin McCarthy. And I just think it's really cool that people are deciding, taking a look at what's going on and saying, look, I have to answer this higher calling. I have to show up for the people. And I just want you to know that it's so appreciated. I appreciate it. People listening appreciate it. Before I let you go, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you?
Well, everybody, I'm very easy to find. Just go to www.marcusforgeorgia, all spelled out, MarcusForGeorgia.com, MarcusForGeorgia.com, and check out our campaign, see what it is that we stand for. And if you can, donate. We also have a volunteer link. You can volunteer and do phone banking, as Kimberly was talking about. Text messages. We have a lot of room for volunteers. You know, we're going to get out. We're going to knock 100,000 doors. People in our district want to come out and help knock doors. Even if you're not from our district, we're close. You know, we'd love to have you. And Kimberly, thank you for having us on. We appreciate the fact that you're an important voice here, and you've allowed us to come and talk to your followers. It's an honor. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. And you take care, and go visit his site. Give him some money. Help him out. Volunteer. Thank you, Marcus.
Thank you, Kimberly.
Take care. Bye-bye.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.